Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
The Jedi who captured me seeks the map. She knows about Thrawn.
Who is this Jedi?
Ahsoka Tano.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Streaming, a Decoding TV podcast. I am David Chen.
I'm Patrick Klepek.
On This Week in Streaming, each week, we cover a show that's new and interesting in the world of streaming. We'll tell you if it's worth watching, and if it is, we'll review and spoil and discuss the entire season of the show. Today, we're going to be discussing the first two episodes of Ahsoka, Episode 1, Master and Apprentice, and Episode 2, Toil and Trouble. And next week, we will be covering the Max original series, HBO original series, Max original series, Telemarketers, which is a three-part docuseries that we will be discussing and spoiling its entirety next week. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com and find us on YouTube, where we're broadcasting live, as well as Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Threads, at decodingtv. All right. Patrick Klepek, before we dive into today's episode, I think it's fair to say we got to do a little table setting for what this podcast episode is going to be. Okay? At this point, if you're listening to this, and you have been for the last few weeks, you're familiar with mine and Patrick's work and our sensibilities. This podcast episode will be a conversation about Ahsoka as a TV show, from a casual Star Wars fan, a.k.a. Patrick Klepek, and an even casualer Star Wars fan, a.k.a. me, David Chen. I need to emphasize, this will not be from the perspective of somebody who's seen Rebels or loves Rebels or hardcore Clone Wars fan or anything like that. If that's what you are looking for, there are tons of podcasts out there that will fill that need. And I would urge you to seek them out because you will not find that here.
Not the discourse you're looking for.
This is not the discourse you're looking for. That's exactly right. And I say all that because I think, you know, there are a lot of people who might listen to this who are hardcore Rebels fans. And they love Rebels and they love Ahsoka. And they want to hear that fandom reflected back at them via a podcast. That is a very understandable human desire, and I support you in it, but that is not what you're going to get with this podcast. So this is just going to be, we're talking about it as a TV show, what we, Patrick and I, think about this show as people who aren't super familiar with the character of Ahsoka Tano. And so that's what this will be. That said, Patrick Klepek, why don't you share a little bit about what your familiarity is with Star Wars at this point, because I think you're pretty much caught up on all the live action TV series. Is that right?
I am, yes. That would be I do. Like, I love Star Wars. Like, I'm here for like all of the major tentpole stuff, especially in the like post The Force Awakens age, where they moved from hey, we're gonna do a big movie around Christmas every couple of years to wrap up a trilogy and then go dormant for, you know, 15 right. to 20 years. It used to be that Star Wars were events, and I think Star Wars as an IP is sort of still an event, but it has definitely been chasing the more serialized Marvel style nature of storytelling. And I think this television show epitomizes like the complicated nature of doing that within the Star Wars universe, which is obviously something that we'll get into in unpacking our thoughts on the show. But man, there's a lot of those animated shows. There's many episodes, many seasons. I have friends, close, incredibly close friends. If you want to go hear three-hour discussions on a couple of Clone Wars episodes, like, go listen to A More Civilized Age with like my colleague Rob Zachney, Austin Walker, and all other folks. I can't find, it's time. Like, it is not a lack of interest in wanting to understand the previous context of these characters, but it is sheer time to invest in watching that show. Didn't have it in the past. Now I've got two kids. Definitely don't have it now. Maybe if my oldest is interested in watching that stuff in the future, great. I can be a parent and also watch a TV show instead of picking one or the other. And frankly, like, the closer we got to this show, David, the more I was interested in going into it as blind as possible with the previous context, because the show is choosing to not catch me up on that in a different fashion. And so how does this show hit and weave in those previous narratives while trying to be interesting to its previous fans who have this previous context? That made the show even more interesting for me as someone that is vaguely aware of, like, I know much more about Rebels and Clone Wars than you. There are certain phrases I could say that won't spoil anything, but would mean nothing to you, that I think are going to play enormous roles in where this season rolls out. So I have just through like cultural osmosis of people being like, ah, like, this show's coming out. You should know what blank blank worlds
mean. Please, Patrick, I know what "May the Force be with you" means. Okay, you don't need to gatekeep.
What's the world between worlds? I don't know. Maybe we'll find out later this season. But like, so I have a little bit more, but it's just enough context. But I am just someone who's broadly watching the live action shows and the films and is not, and the games. Fallen, actually, the two video games actually have a surprising amount of tie-in with here. The most recent ones, Fallen Order and
Jedi Survivor.
Jedi Survivor have it is clear there's gonna be some pretty key narrative through lines between those games, what's happening here. So I have a little more ground than you, but I think we're on the same level of broadly not having interacted with the animated shows that did so much work to kind of fill in the gaps left by the prequels in many ways.
Yeah. Why don't we just briefly, before we get into our overall thoughts on the first two episodes of Ahsoka, just talk a little bit about our experience with the live action shows. I'm just going to be super upfront and say I started watching Mandalorian and it became clear very quickly, like within five episodes, that this was not going to be a show that I would enjoy. It felt like I'm remembering something that happened years ago. So this is just my vague recollections, but it felt like a show where very little happened from episode to episode. There were cool visuals. Baby Yoda is very cute and stuff like that. I know it's like way beyond that now, but like, it just felt like a show that felt very similar. It felt like from the kind of J.J. Abrams school of Star Wars filmmaking, where we're just going to refer back to things that have already happened, and visuals and iconic imagery and ideas that have already happened before, rather than forging new ground. That was my relatively negative opinion of Mandalorian when I started watching it. Obviously, Decoding TV has reviewed Andor, which I thought was a masterpiece, one of the best things I've ever seen. And so Andor kind of reinvigorated my enthusiasm for the Star Wars universe. And then Patrick Klepek joining me on Decoding TV on a regular basis made me feel, hey, maybe there's an interesting conversation to be had about Ahsoka. So that's why I'm back in the game, at least for the first two episodes. And so overall, my view on like the Star Wars TV series has been like not even negative, just like I just haven't been engaging in them.
You kind of exited from even engaging them. And I'm definitely on the flip side of that, where I think you're really selling the Mandalorian short. It is true that at least in the first two seasons, which I found to be, I think the first season is the strongest, and I still quite like season two. In that, yes, there is a referential nature that is one of the biggest weak points of modern Star Wars. I wholeheartedly agree with, despite The Last Jedi being about destroying the past, it is a franchise that does not actually know how to do that or how to engage with that as a like broader franchise concept. But
let me gotta cut in here.
Because
I think, having spoken to Rian Johnson a couple times, on podcasts, he always corrects people, right? Like the line, forget the past, kill it if you have to, is spoken by Kylo Ren. It is not the theme of the movie. The theme of The Last Jedi is we must move. Like, if you recall the ending of The Last Jedi, they burn down the tree, but Rey still takes the scrolls with her, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, honor the past.
So you must honor the past, but you must forge new ground and move on from it. So anyway,
Star Wars can't do that either. whatever interpretation you want to take, I don't know. Fair enough. Obviously, I would agree. You know, I will defer to the filmmaker's thematic intent, but I think the point broadly still stands. But the Mandalorian for me, like the not much happens. Buddy, that's like was one of my favorite parts about the show was like it was pulp in nature. It didn't feel like empty calories necessarily as much. It was just like, I'm just here going on a journey with this guy, this weird little dude. What happened? Like, I don't know. They got up into a little misadventure. This Mandalorian character, he's kind of a dumbass. He's not a particularly good hero. He's constantly getting tossed around and beat up and just sort of scraps his way to the end. And they move on to the next thing. And the lack of real connective tissue, like it felt episodic. It felt just like I'm just tuning in an old school sort of way to an episode of a show that, yes, did have a connected narrative because of course it was going to, but that you could have plucked any one episode out of that, especially the first season, shown to someone and be like, oh, like this was the one where they were on the ice planet and like it was fun. And you wouldn't feel like incompletely lost. You could enjoy it for the spectacle that was there. And that was my favorite part of those first two seasons of The Mandalorian. And the closer it got towards, stay in your box. Like the box was the cool part.
The closer it got to intersecting with characters and events that we already know from the mainline franchise.
Correct. Like, you know, never more epitomized by certain events that happen at the end of season two of The Mandalorian, which I don't need to spoil in this segment. People will know what I'm talking about.
They'll know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yes. And so, but I've kept along because I like these characters, I like this universe, and I'm every once in a while, a piece of work comes along that like reminds me of like what's possible in the universe. And so I don't blame people for stepping away. A lot of it is just like, what is your baseline, what can you get out of baseline enjoyment out of something in that universe, absent it necessarily being something truly excellent, like an Andor or a Last Jedi. And it sounds like for you, like it wasn't enough anymore. Like it just hitting certain beats, being in that universe wasn't hitting it for you. It still hits it for me where I'm willing to ride the ups and downs. And then you get to something like an Andor and you're like, oh my, like this, well, this is actually kind of unfair. Like this, I mean, I'm glad it exists. Like I'd rather it exist than it doesn't exist, but it's also like, gee, like comparing like anything, take the Star Wars out of it. Like Andor is just incredible storytelling done within a like pre-existing franchise, just on a level that is like really, really, really hard to hit. And again, I'm glad it exists, but it makes for comparative to anything else that is out in the world. Like that is going to be that's a high bar to clear, because Andor, I think, exists on its own sort of S tier of it's just a good, great television show that happens to be in Star Wars and has benefited from it. But, you could take a lot of what's in that show and rip the Star Wars part out and it would still have been tremendous.
Right. I was talking with a filmmaker who said Andor is not necessarily so good that it makes the rest of Star Wars look bad, but it's more like the fact that Andor takes place literally, I think, in the time leading up to A New Hope, right? And if you were to watch A New Hope after Andor, it would seem very silly. It would seem like very low stakes compared to the stuff going on.
The tonal shift is
pretty intense.
Yeah, the tonal
shift. That's the thing. Yeah, the tonal shift.
Because you're going from a serious political thriller like about revolutions like a pulp, like Star Wars is pulpy.
Space opera. Yeah, exactly right. Okay. Well, so that's where Patrick and I are coming from when it comes to Star Wars, right? So all that said, let's talk about Ahsoka. Again, I must reiterate, we have no deep familiarity with Rebels. We're just trying to evaluate this as like, hey, this is kind of, I know, and I also know Ahsoka has appeared in Mandalorian episodes and so on. So
one episode.
And also Book of Boba Fett, if I recall correctly, right?
Yes.
And so I know Ahsoka has been in this universe live action before, but it's like, this is kind of like the big intro of this character to the live action format. It's her own show. So all that said, Patrick Klepek, let's talk about overall thoughts. What do you think of the first two episodes of the show?
I will say I'm glad they released both episodes because I think the second is stronger than the first and helps fill in some gaps that I was waiting to be filled in the first, especially in regards to who are these characters? What are their individual motivations and a personal relationship to one another? Why are we sad about this hologram? Why is everyone talking about Ezra? Like some of that stuff still not answered. And I think will become unfurled further into the show. At least I hope for it to be more unfurled into the show. But I quite liked it. I think some of the action is like really thrilling. Like the fighting style of Ahsoka is like different enough from what I have seen from other Jedi style characters that it's tough to make a lightsaber scene seem interesting these days. There's just been a lot of them. And sometimes the way to make it interesting is either to give it big thematic stakes or obviously the throne room scene in The Last Jedi, where it's like there's thematic stakes, but also just visually arresting. Like it is just going to grab you. And here, because of the nature of the budget, the scale, the fact that you're working in the volume, you have certain things kind of working against the production on a broader standpoint. But like Ahsoka as a character and their fighting style is just fun and interesting and surprising. And like multiple times throughout both episodes, every time that an action scene was going to occur, sometimes that's a groan when you're working with the Star Wars television shows because of the nature of how they're made. And here, despite probably also still having limitations of working within the volume and all that entails, what she actually did in those scenes and the kind of quiet swagger she has was just like really thrilling. Like all the way down to that sequence in the second episode when the ship is leaving with the big warp drive and that lightsaber like kind of swings back and she just sort of dodges out of the way of it. Just there, I think the character, I know we're going to talk about this, about kind of how the character like carries themselves, how a lot of these characters carry themselves can feel a little awkward from a directing standpoint. But I don't know. Despite really feeling like I'm lacking some context, I don't think that lack of context is like burying the show. I don't feel like this show is, if you don't know who these characters are prior to this, even if you didn't watch The Mandalorian and don't have some sort of context for like how Ahsoka intersects with this slice of the Star Wars universe, I do think it's doing a sharp job of setting up the stakes for these characters and getting me invested. And frankly, setting up some weirdness in the Star Wars universe that, like witches and other mystical uses of the Force, like expanding, like it all sounds pretty interesting to me. I don't think it's not Andor level, but I just sort of take that off the table because, like I said, I think that's a comparative misfire. Most television's not going to be that good, let alone a Star Wars show. But in terms of the Star Wars shows I have watched, I think this is a pretty good one. And I'd frame this to you when we were talking about how we might approach covering this show on the podcast going forward. And I distinctly said, regardless of the quality, David, I will be watching all 8 episodes of this show. And it's above that, right? Like it is. And I would arguably say like far above that bar where like I'm actively having a really good time I watch all these shows with my wife. We tend to watch everything together with some very rare exceptions. And she's always an interesting, I can get Twitter osmosis on Clone Wars and Rebels and some context of these characters because of my job. She is the most offline person. And I love it about her dearly. She has no idea what's happening on the internet and I love her for it. And it keeps me grounded, but it also means like, what do you think of this show? And like the first episode, she comes out of that and goes kind of slow, not super sure what's happening. And then the second episode is like, that's pretty sick. I want to see what's in that galaxy. And I'm like, okay, I'm not totally out of line here. And that always makes me feel better when the two of us are kind of like on the same wavelength with the show. So I come out of these two episodes genuinely excited and interested to see where it's going. And I don't know about excited, but interested to see how they can make me care about all the ancillary characters and the way they're going to weave them back in. And I think that's like no more heightened than this character of Ezra, because it's just like, clearly it's important to the show and the characters.
Yeah.
And I just think it's such a huge, how are they going to climb this mountain of dozens, hundreds of episodes of emotional investment
right.
and make me care about something that's big moments that are clearly being signaled to happen in this show. And I'm at this point, I don't have to pull it off, but I'm curious to see how it plays.
Beautifully said, as usual, Patrick. My summary is not going to be nearly as eloquent or lengthy as that. Here's my reaction to Ahsoka episodes 1 and 2. It's fine. It's mm-hmm. fine. Here's what's great about it. I think it overall looks great. I think the stuff you said about Ahsoka and her fighting style, I think they've done a good job with the character, bringing the character to life and making her seem cool. I think she has a real aloof vibe going on that I think makes it very strange to me that she is kind of the person that is the central character of this show. I don't, not familiar with the character's Pat. Maybe she, you know, there's no need to write in to decodingtv@gmail.com and say she was aloof in the show, in the cartoon.
We're acknowledging.
I don't really care what she was before. I'm simply saying what she is yep. now. And it's like, it doesn't make for a super engaging watch for me. I'm not like, oh, like, yes, that's the most interesting character. I would argue she's the least interesting character in the show so far, right? Like,
this is me folding my arms.
Yeah, exactly. She's just
David
like really
Chen
like
and just writing a furious email about Rebels season 4. Mm-hmm.
I thought you were imitating Ahsoka just now, but I was yeah. She's just like kind of folding her arms and kind of like looking pensively or looking mm-hmm, disapprovingly. Mm-hmm. Like that's a lot of what the character does in the first two episodes. And meanwhile, like other characters are really extremely dynamic by comparison, mm-hmm. you know, like Sabine Wren, arguably over the top in their dynamism compared to Ahsoka. So I do think it's an interesting choice to make Ahsoka the main character, given what we see of the character in these episodes. Now, highly likely the character is going to change over time and open up and so on. Here's what else is great about the show. I think something that people really didn't like about Andor is, quote unquote, it doesn't feel like Star Wars. There are no lightsabers. There's no force, right? Like, these are the issues people had with Andor. Issues completely absent in Mandalorian, issues completely absent in this show, right? This is what people are looking for when they want that Star Wars feeling. There are lightsaber battles and ship dogfights and so on. And they're actually really cool. Like, they're really well done.
Lots of star maps. You get a star map. You get a star map. Everyone gets a star map.
I was a huge Star Wars fan growing up, Patrick Lepik. Mm-hmm. I actually spent a lot of time reading the Expanded Universe books.
You are familiar with Heir to the Empire, right?
I've read Heir to the Empire. I've read a bunch of those Timothy Zahn books. Because for a long time, that was all we had. Like, we had the three movies and then mm-hmm. a bunch of books. And that was it. We had nothing else. And so I love the original trilogy. And I'm like, I'm desperate for more of this universe. And so I read a bunch of those books. Then they said, guess what? None of those books are true. but I did read a bunch of books with Grand Admiral Thrawn. So they did bring that character back.
Interesting.
From the Expanded Universe. Right. So he was in the books I read. And they're like, guess what? We're not doing that anymore. But they decided to retain some elements of it, including Grand Admiral Thrawn. So I actually have a lot of associations with Grand Admiral Thrawn from decades ago, from like when I read it, these books in my childhood, even though I haven't seen his character in the animated shows. So it's exciting to me to like see Grand Admiral Thrawn in like this live action context. And that there is a part of me that is like moderately interested in that. That said, so those are all like the positive things I have to say about the show.
Run out of those. There's a whole other bullet point though.
That said, I find the overall style and I would say cadence of the show, which I will get to, I will describe in detail later on in this podcast, to be borderline unwatchable is probably too strong. I find it to be very slow paced, very frustrating in terms of how slow it is. It's, you know, when I on Threads, I threaded about the show. And I said,
sorry, I just threw up in my throat a little bit. Sorry, keep going.
I said, the show is made up of broadly drawn characters speaking at a painfully slow pace, delivering clunky and repetitive exposition. That's kind of how I feel about, end quote. That's how I feel about a lot of the show, is that like, and maybe that's a function of what you've said, which is they have to like catch people up to what has happened in the past with these characters. And maybe that will be less of a problem in the episodes to come. I doubt it. I do want to acknowledge, like, they're trying to do a lot of work. The task before them is difficult. They have dozens and dozens of episodes of this animated show that they want people to lean on, but they also need newcomers such as myself to understand fundamentally what was going on there. So it's a tough task, but I found the show very challenging in that regard. Just literally the style and cadence of dialogue is tough for me to sit through. And there's also just weird stuff that happens that I'm just like, I'm baffled by some of the storytelling decisions, and we will talk about those momentarily. So those are my overall thoughts on Ahsoka. It's fine. I didn't hate it. Didn't love it. I didn't enjoy it nearly as much as you. But I certainly think it serves a role for people who are looking like fans of the animated series and also just looking for that Star Wars fix. I do think this will deliver it for them. So those are some of my overall thoughts on the first two episodes of Ahsoka.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, Patrick Klepek. Let's talk about what happens in the first two episodes. So episode one, Master and Apprentice. We are not going to spoil the episodes. The first opening crawl occurs since 2019's The Rise of Skywalker, and the first for a Star Wars TV show, which reveals Ahsoka's premise. Tracking down the missing Imperial Grand Admiral Thrawn, worried he could start a war just as the New Republic is settling into running the galaxy. So let's pause here for a moment. This series takes place in the time between episodes 6 and 7, right? The Empire has fallen. The New Republic is taking hold. Unfortunately, we already know how the story ends, which is that it's not going to go well if The Force Awakens is to be believed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought this is a very fun, invigorating opening crawl. I don't know if you had any thoughts on it.
It gives it's such a curious choice because it gives a real gravitas to the storytelling. Like, part of, I don't know how much of that is because we haven't seen it in the television show. How much of that is I didn't realize how much I missed it as part of just the overall aesthetic of sitting down for a Star Wars story. I was tickled by the appearance of it. And I thought it like did its job, didn't overstay its welcome. I'm glad it's not like every episode, like, hey, we're back. What previously on Ahsoka, we're going to do this through the crawl. But it's especially if what they're setting up is, you know, they've announced, you know, well, this is a very common thing, Star Wars thing. You announce a film and then you don't make it. But these TV shows are off and running. If any of the movies do happen, I would be fairly confident this one probably does because the tracks are actively being laid and these television shows are coming out and being fairly successful at a regular clip. That by putting that crawl there, in some ways you're acknowledging this, like, hey, like, this really matters. Like, this crawl tells you as the viewer, we are laying like narrative groundwork in this show for things that are going to have big impacts in this universe. And that's a you know, that's biting off a lot. And especially can set yourself up for failure if it doesn't necessarily pull those things off between this weaving of television shows and films, which is sort of the opposite of how we've seen it with things like Marvel, or just like most franchise productions, start at a movie level, go to a television level. This is start at a movie level, is using side characters to go to television level, and then is going to go back up to a movie level, which is just a weird moving between audiences and distribution methods and just production making. But that's a long way of saying, like, I really liked it, and I'm glad it was there.
I thought it was solid. It's solid. It felt like stylistically in spirit keeping with, you know, what we've seen from the movies.
And so, if you're going to, this point you made about where this series, more than probably any other, because of the baggage it comes with its characters in terms of where they've appeared elsewhere, has a lot of exposition that it has to do, like, by requirement, just to get people from point A to point B. And you know what? If you got to dump some exposition, like, a crawl is a great place to do it. And like, it feels right and normal. And like if you have to do some, how do we explain our premise? Like, the crawl at least feels naturalistic to the setting.
My only objection, look, I love your enthusiasm for the show and do not wish to blunt it in any way, but
this has been the premise of this podcast I've been doing with you so far. Is like, I think Twisted Metal is a flaming Sweet Tooth style pile of garbage. I'm having a laugh out here, David. We're having a good time with this show.
Hey, so, our positions are sometimes reversed, like full circle, you know, like, I think I was like holding the flag for that show. I agree with you if that is what the show did. But then the show shows you the opening crawl and then proceeds to repeat those plot points over and over again, making the opening crawl completely unnecessary. So
it does, like, not feel like the crawl was who knows how this actually happened, but it does give the impression that the crawl was like in a room. Someone's like, you know, it'd be really neat. Or like Kathleen Kennedy's like, you know what, this one, you get the crawl. And it doesn't feel as though the crawl was written in conjunction with the scripts, where we, like, the assumption is, hey, they've read the crawl. So, like,
we don't need to repeat.
Doesn't have to do some just like explaining of character motivations to a hologram at some point.
Exactly. Say what you will about Rise of Skywalker, of which I can say many negative things, but introducing the idea that the Emperor is still alive, it's like it just picks up right at that point. Like, there's no Alzheimer. It doesn't go back and be like, it's like one of the most famous memes of the movie is somehow Palpatine returns. So it's like, it just is like, hey, we're taking it for granted and we're moving forward. We're not going to go back and like re-explore that idea, unfortunately I think is what they showed us. Okay, so Ahsoka opens with two characters. Baylan Skoll, a Jedi-turned-mercenary, played by the late Ray Stevenson, who, like, great actor, dedication for Ray. Like, it really, you know, you're seeing one of his last roles, and it was a delight to see him, because I do think he's very talented and obviously very respected. Anyway, and Shin Hati, his apprentice, boarding a New Republic ship, killing the captain, much of the crew, and escaping with a prisoner, Lady Morgan Elspeth. Elsewhere, former Jedi Knight Ahsoka Tano tracks down an orb that holds a star map pointing towards Thrawn. Ahsoka's ally, General Hera, recommends an old friend, Sabine Wren, might crack the code. Sabine, in between avoiding ceremonies meant to celebrate her past victories, mourns the apparent death of an old friend, Ezra Bridger. Ahsoka begrudgingly asks Sabine for help with a star map and reveals that the Star Wars universe apparently has witches. We learn Ahsoka was at one point training Sabine to be a Jedi, and after the two depart, Sabine solves the secrets of the orb and reveals a star map to an unknown galaxy, just in time to be attacked by an attack squad sent by Morgan Elsbeth, who's also seeking a path towards finding Thrawn. So that's what happens in the first episode. We should also point out that at the end of the first episode, Sabine gets a lightsaber in the torso, like
uncomfortable spot.
Right in the torso.
Didn't look good.
A blow that we have seen kill many characters in Star Wars in the past. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, I had already seen a screenshot of the character of Sabine Wren with a shorter haircut. So I was like, okay, she's not dead. Because we're going to see her later on in the show with a shorter haircut, which is what happens in the next episode. So there was no suspense for me, like there was when Emilia Clarke's character died in Secret Invasion.
I guess I didn't I didn't necessarily put two and two together with the like screenshots from
Potential
for the episodes. I was like, this character is clearly from Rebels. They're not gonna kill. Like, I didn't take any stakes of that. And I don't know that the show was necessarily even communicating that like she should be dead. I just felt like she was like, this is why she can't get up and
because she got a freaking lightsaber through her chest.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I just gotta say, I'm gonna say this once, and I hopefully will not harp on it again. But pretty confusing to have characters die of lightsabers going through you. And then literally we see her in the next episode and she like reveals the wound. It looks like if you had like if you left a quarter in your car, like in the sun, and you like put it on your body and burned yourself a little bit. Like that's what it looks like. It looks like.
But also, in theory, when she got hit by that, if she stood up and you leaned down and look at her stomach, in theory, I could see through the other side. I'm assuming that the lightsaber disintegrates whatever it's touching.
That is my assumption. That is my assumption. So she looks like she's. It was comical how little the wound seemed to affect her at all. Anyway, that bothered me, but you know, whatevs. Okay, putting that aside, any thoughts on this first episode? We've talked a lot about kind of how they had to set the table with Ezra and so on. Like Ezra is obviously really important, but yeah. Any other thoughts on like how you thought this episode played out?
Other than obviously like portraying Sabine Wren as this like master analyst that solves a Hellraiser like puzzle box by just like turning three knobs. she does so much work in actually, frankly, both episodes into like the show is called Ahsoka, but where I'm getting grounded in both episodes is really like the enthusiasm of Sabine Wren, like that character and everything they represent and the actions they take in both episodes. And frankly, the arc that they appear to be on, which we learn much more about in the second episode. Like again, the title character is right there, but the emotion, like Ahsoka has no emotional entry point for the audience. Especially if you don't they seem to be making a pointed effort. If you don't know how she arrives at this emotionally, if you don't know the previous appearances she's had in the Star Wars universe, you don't have the emotional connection to the journey she's been on with, you know, her former, working with Anakin Skywalker and stuff throughout Clone Wars and Rebels. She's very closed off. There's no way for the audience to even empathize with her because there's no there for you. And so Sabine acts as this character for the audience. And I think I can't speak to how are these actors nailing the adaptations of performance, sure. But I find her extremely compelling. I find the idea of like this, like former, like kind of like spurred, like kind of apprentice that like, you know, is trying to be like, all that. She seems really interesting. And like, I'm hoping the show, like as we get, hopefully get an entry points into Ahsoka as a character, they've got her, and like when she's on screen, it's magnetic, and I want to see more of what she's up to. And so she did a lot of the work for me in this episode, especially when it's a lot of chess pieces, like clearly being played, like the struggles of a pilot doing so midstream in franchise storytelling, and this one having the unique challenge of like. It's a sequel while also an adaptation of like, and it's like, so it's a lot to keep in your head. But it's like that between her, like that character and where they're going. And, frankly, like every time Ahsoka gets into a combat sequence, that did a lot of the work for me in terms of being like interested to see what lied ahead in the second episode. And that like, yeah, it's finding a MacGuffin, it's finding a doodad, but at least if you're going to do something as, which Star Wars has done a million times before, and they just did it multiple times in like the recent trilogy of films, like a lot of finding maps to find people. If you're going to do that again, like the actions on the ground better be interesting. And like the whole bits with her dual lightsabers and the circles with the like attack droids, like it was just extremely, like it actually surprised me. How often are you surprised by an action in a lightsaber fight? And like they got a laugh out of me in a way that I was like, man, if you can keep that kind of momentum with the show, like over the course of it, that will do a lot of work as you're getting the audience to care about the characters and up to speed on the arcs. Cause it kind of needs both of those if you're going to get people like you and me to care at all about the emotional journey they're on.
Yeah. I mean, I have some questions about the design of the city that Sabine was in. She was riding a speeder to show how rebellious she was. Mm-hmm. And the road seems to go to nowhere. Like it just goes to the desert, which like is generally not how roads work. So, but you know,
could have used a planet wide shot. Give me just one, like show me a planet name in the corner. And then like, give me a sense of where that, it is one of those moments where you get a wide shot of the downtown, whatever that.
Yeah.
Is.
Yeah.
You don't have a sense of what is the structure of this planet that would explain. I agree. A question you're not thinking about in the moment as like a race sequence is playing out. But the moment it ends, it's like, does this road just lead to her house? Like, did they? Yeah. She was so victorious in these cartoons. They're like, we got to build a road to Sabine Wren. Like, yeah, the road to Sabine is right down this path.
I have a lot of questions about the urban planning that was going on in that city, is all I have to say. But maybe that was the case, and a lot of people will write in to decodingtv@gmail.com and say, hey, actually, you dumb.
Take that answer if there is an answer, because
it's the Sabine Wren freeway. That's what it is, you know?
Well, so I think that city is, you know, Clancy Brown plays the mayor, and I believe he is the voice of that leader in the cartoon. So I wouldn't be shocked if actually this is an instance where instead of us being snarky, it's like, if there is an actual answer,
yeah,
I would be curious to know, like, what is the structure if that was revealed in previous works.
The scene with Baylan, you know, Baylan and his apprentice taking over the ship, I thought it was a pretty cool scene. Very similar to other Star Wars scenes. Like, Star Wars,
he's got a presence though, man. Like,
he's awesome.
Like, are just certain actors that when they just put on the Jedi veneer, some pull it off better than others. And like the moment he is on screen and you get a sense of his deal, he just exudes it. And there's just something like some actors can just exude that. And it's part performance and part of just intrinsically kind of how they're built and present. And man, like every time he's on, he projects in a way that is really fun.
I agree. He's actually probably my favorite actor in the show. Just like in terms of what he's doing. I do think Star Wars folks have a thing for hallways. You know, like people love it when the hallways happen, like the guy tearing down the hallway, and this gives you another hallway thing. So on the one hand, it's exciting for people. On the other hand, it's like, I feel like I've seen this scene a bunch of times. It's done well here, but it's like, it's another Star Wars hallway.
Yeah.
What else to mention about this episode? That's mostly it. They, you know, they have the star. There's a lot of like twisting of stones and rocks into so the things are in alignment.
Lots of slow camera pans over things that will be important later. Yeah. You know, like, look at these glyphs. What do they mean?
Right.
Stay tuned for Secrets of the Glyph, episode 6. You know, a lot of what's happening here is, and I think this is true across episodes 1 and 2, is, and we'll see how successful, like, what does it mean to say we're going to different parts of the Star Wars universe? Like, not the same planets, not the same peoples. But like, there's a lot of work being done in Ahsoka to set up, like, we're going somewhere else. Like, this isn't just the same places we've been before. There's a decent chance that we're going to different places to do the same things. That would be the danger. But, you know, there is a lot of work being done in a mysterious sort of sense. Like, we just don't know what these things mean. Whether the answers are interesting is like something we're not going to be able to answer, you know, at least to some degree, till later in the season.
Let's talk about episode 2, Toil and Trouble. Sabine, wounded trying to fend off Elsbeth's squad, is recovering in the hospital when she reveals the discovery and subsequent losing of the secret star map. Simultaneously, Baelin and his apprentice arrive at a strange rock formation that holds an unknown power, while Ahsoka discovers a hidden attack droid hiding out in Sabine's home. It's an unexpected gift, though, as the droid's backup systems, manipulated by Sabine, can reveal where it came from. Morgan Elsbeth arrives at the rock formation, revealing it's not an ancient Jedi temple, but the creation of a more ancient people. Elsbeth reveals Thrawn calls to her across time and space. And when Shin Hati asks why finding Thrawn is important, Baelin says it will give access to power such as you've never dreamed. Ahsoka heads to the planet where the droid came from, which includes an old factory run by Elsbeth during the height of the Empire. She discovers a plot to smuggle equipment to Elsbeth, and despite the best efforts of Ahsoka and General Hera, a critical drive core escapes the planet and heads towards Elsbeth and whatever she's building. Meanwhile, Sabine has a revelation over her past. She cuts her hair, dons her old Mandalorian armor, and joins Ahsoka on her quest to find Thrawn and Ezra. Ahsoka then refers to Sabine as her apprentice, and we're left with a shot of a massive circular device being built by Elsbeth. So that's what happens in episode two. The action scenes in episode two were awesome. Like,
yeah.
Ahsoka fighting off the droids and aerial fighting, I thought that was all like really, really well done. And it makes up a significant portion of episode two.
When I was going back and kind of writing up the recap, and it's like, all right, what else is the rest of the episode? It's like, well, the next 10 minutes are a cool fight scene. And it's like, skip, like, you know, as I'm just like making sure to put down so we could talk about it. It's like, it's, I think, notable that, you know, for, that those fight scenes are as memorable and as interesting as they are. Cause I think that's difficult to do in Star Wars, because it's like, you can see the series trying this over and over the course of its history. You know, you have like a Darth Maul where he's got a sick face. And then also like, it's like the lightsaber comes out both ways. And then you have other ones where it's like, they're holding one in each hand. And you know, it's like, how many different ways can we hold a laser light and make it interesting? And so that's, you know, the fact that Ahsoka clears that bar, I think, a couple different times across both episodes, where it's not just that her fighting style is different, but it's like the enemies they're giving her to fight and what she has to do as a result of that to sort of adapt to the fight, I found interesting frequently. And I know it seems like, of course, like a Star Wars show should have like decent lightsaber action, but I don't think that's a given, especially on the scale of a television show where they probably aren't spending as much time setting up, doing the choreography. Like, because you're going to be doing a bunch of these over a number of episodes, as opposed to, hey, we're doing a 2-hour movie. Like, this is the big set piece that has to sell the heart of the film. It was easy to imagine that stuff falling by the wayside a little bit more in a television show where you're kind of like checking off a box. And at least I'm grateful that Ahsoka is like really putting in time to make those feel meaningful and not just checkbox filler. Like, we'll see how often they can keep that going through the rest of the show, because I think right now they're finding a decent line between, like, there's just more you can achieve in animation, right? Where characters can do things that are much harder to pull off in live action. So far, I think they're finding an interesting balance of how do you do things that are a little more exaggerated and different with this character, but also realizing you have to shoot it with real cameras, you know, like in the volume. And so a lot of that stuff stuck out alongside just a lot of the Sabine stuff really working for me. Like, this character that has the sequence... I didn't have this as a side note, but like, I'll just, now that it's occurring to me here, like, the TV shows have good ass robots across the board. They do. Every new show seems to have like another good one. And like, this one has two. The character of Chopper, which I know comes from the television shows, like, he's great. Like, the thumbs up, like, the attitude that little guy has on the side of the ship is great. The Ahsoka's robot is fantastic. And the sequence he has with Sabine, where they talk about training, being a Jedi, like, I found that all to be like pretty touching and interesting. And I don't know how much of that is in one conversation trying to communicate a bunch of stuff that happened before, or if this is brand new. Either way, it totally worked and sold me on like, are really kind of fascinating Star Wars characters. Like, what if someone wants to be a Jedi, wield a lightsaber, but is basically being told, bro, you got like zero connection to the Force. Like, it sucks for you. Like, you're not anywhere close to that. And then what does that mean for this character? What does it mean to be a Jedi? What does the Force mean to this character? And so all of that, like, obviously, because I keep returning to it in this discussion, like, ended up really working for me on a character level.
Yeah, we should also acknowledge that Ahsoka herself is apparently not a Jedi, right? She was a former Jedi Knight, but is no longer a Jedi. So she has Jedi skills, but no longer thinks of herself as part of the institution. So I think that will be a major element of this season, is like people's relationship to being a Jedi and whether or not they are a Jedi. Credit where credit's due, you know, there is some very mild political commentary going on in this episode where are you familiar with the concept of the Muppets and Muppet babies?
In what way? I mean, I'm familiar with the characters in the frame. Like, what's the relationship here?
Oh, I just feel like this episode's plotline was kind of like Andor babies.
I very much like that when they it's at the end. It was just like, ah, I expected someone to just go like, ah, capitalism.
Yeah,
what a bitch. Like, you know, it was felt like very much.
Why are all these people are working? You know, some of these people were loyal to the Empire, and it's like it's because of greed. That's why, Patrick.
In it for the money?
They were in it for the money. I hate when that happened. You know, like, which is not, it's not a terrible message, but it's like relatively simplistic, I would argue, you know? Yes. But it's like, hey, I'm glad they're like at least trying to provide some kind of nuance to what happened in the, you know, between the events of episode 6 and 7.
Which has always
been a big question mark in my mind. Sure. Of how you get from the Empire falling back to, by the way, the Empire is back again, right? And so if this show can help to illustrate some of those things, then I think it will be providing a useful service. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, yeah. I mean, in addition to the like wagging finger, greed and capitalism is bad sort of like bit in there, there's also, yeah, that storytelling that you're talking about, or that kind of like world building happening where, like, well, did you just employ all the people that worked like here before, those people? And like, well, yeah, what did you, like, they're here, like, what did you expect us to do?
There's,
and
literally not enough humans. Have you seen how big one of these Death Stars is?
And it's fascinating because you know, Dave Filoni, who is the showrunner on this and is responsible for working with George Lucas to come up with these characters across Rebels and Clone Wars, is credited with doing enormous narrative and world building heavy lifting to like fill in the gaps left by Lucas, or like stuff like why does this have narrative weight? Like, why is this stuff interesting? And like, a lot of the reason people tell me, the reason they love Rebels, Clone Wars, is because it retroactively makes the watching the prequels much more interesting if you assume that as all part of the same tapestry. And in many ways, it's interesting to see, like, is that job of like doing what George Lucas didn't in his second trilogy of Star Wars films, now having to carry that same job into what was lacking in the most recent trilogy of films, which is exactly what you're talking about, is just, we kind of want to do A New Hope again. An understandable impulse, as much of a cheat as that might be for revitalizing the franchise and bringing it back. But then how do we get there? And it's very clear, like, Abrams and like that whole group putting together that series of films, like, just didn't really think about it. Like, or at least they didn't surface it in the films to let you have any sense of how did we get here? Just don't worry about it. We're here.
And
it seems what might be happening with this series, and maybe the whole arc of adapting those Timothy Zahn novels or taking inspiration from it and bringing Thrawn in, is, hey, we're going to give now retroactive narrative weight and heft to the action, like the events of The Force Awakens, because we have this whole timeline that's basically a blank slate that these film showrunners and directors and writers ignored. And if we fill in those gaps, suddenly this timeline is going to make a lot more sense. And so it's kind of interesting to see Filoni suddenly in that place a second time. But that requires a whole lot of extra viewing to make other things make sense and work in a way that should have been done like more concretely in the original works themselves.
Yeah. Agree with pretty much all that. I do want to clarify the extended or expanded universe was declared to be not true, or I think it was,
right.
It's now rebranded as something called Star Wars Legends, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. So like, and there was all the stuff that like Luke and Leia, the adventures they had that like, you know, are no longer like canon anymore. So I don't know that it's going to, as far as I know, Thrawn is like the biggest thing that they've taken from those things. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's other Star Wars experts bigger than me. Okay, Patrick, we've already talked a little bit about how well we felt these episodes did of setting up the stakes for the show with Ezra. It's hard. They're not showing flashbacks with Ezra, right? So they have to have people like sitting around talking about how cool Ezra was. And that's difficult. That's difficult to mm-hmm. like make you care about that. But I think the show has done a competent job of like setting that up, right? That was one of the topics I wanted to discuss. We have to talk about this other topic, which is...
This is your big one. You've been very patient, David. Yeah. I appreciate it. You've wanted to talk about this the entire time. You got your little clips. I'm so excited for you. Please take it away.
Okay. I just need to know... if it's my imagination that people on Ahsoka talk incredibly slow.
No, it is incredibly slow, not your imagination.
The people in Ahsoka speak at a glacial pace, and I'm going to play a couple clips. I just grabbed a couple clips, and I'm just going to play them. So people, like, because I've been referring to it this whole episode of podcast, mm-hmm. and people are like, come on, Dave, it can't be that, you're making things up, David Chen. So I'm going to play some clips, and we will listen to them, and then people can tell me if they think I don't know what I'm talking about. Here is a clip from the first episode of Ahsoka.
I'm going to need that scan. Can I take this? Where are you going? Somewhere I can think more clearly. I'm not sure that's a good idea.
I thought the clip had ended.
Why? This isn't just about finding Ezra. It's about preventing another war. You think I don't know that? The map stays here. Okay.
All right, so that's a clip from episode one of Ahsoka, all right? I'm going to play that, lest you think that was just like the slowest scene imaginable. Here is a separate clip from episode two of Ahsoka, all right? Here we go. This is Sabine in the hospital recovering from her what appeared to be mortally wounding lightsaber wound. Here we go.
She doesn't want me back. She wasn't even thinking about me.
To be fair, you have never indicated that you want to come back.
Forgot how annoying you are.
Logical.
It doesn't matter. I never had the talent, the abilities. Not like Ezra.
That much is true.
Thanks.
All right, so that's obviously a lot more normal paced. And I do want to be clear that like there are many scenes where people talk in a normal human cadence, but there's also many scenes like the ones I just played. Okay, now for final clip comparison, here is a clip from Andor. Okay, of people talking. So this is just a clip from Andor. I literally randomly just grabbed this before we started recording the podcast. So here we go. This is Andor talking with the character played by Fiona Shaw as things are going badly for Andor, basically, in this clip.
Who else knows?
About what?
That you were born in Canary.
You don't want to hear what happened?
Mm-hmm, we'll get to that. But who knows? Who have we told?
I don't know.
We have always said Fest. Every doc I've ever submitted has always said you were born on Fest. Have you ever said anything other than Fest?
Officially, no, I don't think so, but people, yes.
Who?
And so do
you. Well, how many?
I don't know. It's not something I've been keeping track of.
Well, everyone I've told is dead.
That's ridiculous. Jesse, Samu.
Huh? That's family.
If we're making a list, we're making a list.
Well, it's all your women I'm worried about.
Oh, come on, please.
Femi, Carla,
stop,
Sandri.
Stop, stop!
There's something I don't even know.
So, to me, there is like a marked difference. Like, the people in the latter clip, like, feel like they're humans having an actual intense conversation. And the people in... There's a lot of, like... high school production energy in the first couple clips of just like we're saying our lines and pausing for dramatic effect. And I feel like there's a lot of it's clearly a stylistic choice, right? Like, it is clearly something where it's like, say this line, pause 3 seconds, wait 3 seconds, and then you say the line. And you know, like, that has to be how this is, because it doesn't, people just don't arrive at that naturally. But for me, it absolutely doesn't work at all. Like, it's just, it's painful to endure, because it's not like what they're saying is terribly interesting. It's literally just, we're going back and forth talking about like the map. And like, I posted on Threads about this, and somebody was like, they're supposed to talk like that, David. They're sad. It's a sad time period of their lives. Look, shock, this may shock you, but I have seen TV shows and films where people are sad and upset. Okay. I would argue that this is beyond what you would expect from people who are like kind of in that situation. Okay. People now have heard the evidence, and they can now hear all the evidence and say, David Chen, you have no idea what you're talking about. That's fine. If you don't agree with me, that's fine. But I've at least like presented the case in as decent of way as I can. On this podcast. All right, Patrick Klepek, I await your judgment. What do you think?
The thing is, it makes a lot of sense with Ahsoka, right? Like, that character, how they're presenting her kind of the pensive, like, standoffish, judgmental attitude, which would be in, you know, in kind with many, many, many Jedi. It would make sense with her, and then you could imagine a show that like is a show that's orbiting around her would then have characters frustrated or having tension with her as a result of her attitude, behavior right. towards yeah. others, the standoffish nature. It is definitely odder when it's a stylistic choice. I posit one theory. I'd seen this floated around. I can't credit to anyone, so I apologize, because it just sort of was like in the ether when I was reading about the show. But it's been a long time since I watched the prequels. But if you think of Dave Filoni as somebody who is immersed in the world of the prequels, like born out of mm-hmm. George Lucas's style of filmmaking mm-hmm. specific to the prequels,
yeah.
which memory serves. Last time I watched the prequels was, I think, in the lead up to Force Awakens, just to like for funsies, has more of a theaterish, dramatic quality to it. And so maybe I'm overanalyzing it, but I do wonder if it is not then shocking to see Filoni, when then he decides to move into live action, ends up imitating the creative that he's been so closely aligned with, studying, working with for several decades now. Maybe that's wrong, but that was one reading that I saw from somebody that sort of added up as a possibility. I don't necessarily agree that it's a good one. I definitely didn't find it as distracting as you did, but it's something, especially so the second clip sort of, I didn't really notice that much. The first clip, look, I started laughing at multiple points because I thought Dave wanted me to say something. I was like, oh, am I missing a spot where I'm supposed to jump in? It's like, no, the clip's not over yet. And so, like, point made, like, you got me.
That was my intention. I wanted to get you, Patrick.
No, yes, yes.
But yeah, it's, I think that it sounds like it wasn't as distracting for you, but I don't know that it is like fully working for you either. Like, I think their structure, yeah. what I mean by that is like, it's clearly a choice, meaning they've made that stylistic decision to achieve some kind of creative end or emotional impact. And it doesn't sound like it's having that impact either. Like, you're not like, oh, the weight of this is so heavy and I feel it in these characters and the way they're talking.
Well, and it's one thing if it's, like this character, there's a like appears to be, I think they're called Night Sisters, is sort of like the witch adjacent, like force sensitive characters. Like, yeah, when a witch comes on the screen, like, I expect them to sort of talk in riddles and the pacing right. to be off. And that's why Absolutely. It makes sense also for Ahsoka, but like, it's so, it doesn't make sense for Sabine Wren, who is like a pinball, like bouncing right. off the screen, quite literally. So that I think that's where I fall somewhere in between, like where you're at, and I think where the show is at, where like it makes sense stylistically for certain characters, certain yeah. modes of discussion. It makes less sense as a doesn't across as padding necessarily, as much as it's just like again there were like those when you played that first clip. I think that was very illustrative of the issue. There's you do a lot of podcasts. I do a lot of podcasts. Part of what you learn to do over time is try and navigate like blank spaces in conversation. Sometimes you yes. want to give space to a conversation, and other times what you're doing with the person you're talking with is pausing to give them an opportunity. And it's you over time developing a natural way to understand, to navigate, giving room to breathe. And then also like you're handing the baton to someone and like you're supposed to pick it up. And here, like, you keep waiting for the other character to pick up the baton, and they're just like, ah, it's just so hard, these Star Wars, you know, I just don't know. And I'm with you. It doesn't work as a broad stylistic choice across an entire episode.
Yeah. Not enough yes anding going on in the show. Mm-hmm. At least all I'm looking for is a show, a Star Wars show where people speak like recognizable humans. That's really all I'm not even joking. That's all I'm looking for. And to be fair, there are some stretches where that does happen in the show. So like, I'm not saying it's all terrible, but there's many, many sequences where people speak in such a stilted cadence that it is quite distracting to me. Okay. Those are my biggest beefs with the show. Patrick Klepek, you had one or two topics you wanted to mention, right?
Yeah, we touched on one of them briefly, but I wondered what you made of this show's decision to try and expand, like, in like The Last Jedi, I think there's an argument made in favor of expanding. What is the definition of like who can use the Force? Why are they allowed to use the
right,
Force?
Right.
You know, and like it could just be, you know, a kid in a broom in the middle of nowhere. Here you have, you know, in Sabine Wren, a character who does not appear to be Force sensitive. Like maybe that's something that will occur over the arc of this series. I find it like far more interesting for it to be someone who is like interested in the Jedi ways as a philosophy. And maybe that also means you get to use the lightsaber, but it doesn't necessarily mean you get to hold up your hand and like push objects. And then the introduction of witches, which, so the Night Sisters, I believe, are from Clone Wars or Rebels, like from that era, but then are very prominent in the two recent Electronic Arts Star Wars games, in which you visit Dathomir, the Night Sisters, like home planet, before I think they were wiped out by, I think, General Grievous previously. And one of the characters you meet there becomes part of your crew. They're a central character in the second season, and they introduce a whole different style of using the Force, where like it's this green energy. It allows you to do like, I don't know, what does a witch do? It's like, well, they can do that, and they do that with the Force, which is kind of fundamentally different than our conception of what you use the Force, whether on the light or the dark side. And so that plus, so like it's like those two things that make me curious and interested in like this show working as a way to expand the definition of what does the Force mean? Like it's in one direction, right? Like you said, like there's a show like Andor that like gets rid of all of that entirely. And a movie like The Last Jedi that is, expanding it sort of like in terms of like who's allowed to use it. That doesn't mean like your blood is special. And then you have something like this. It's like, hey, we're going to have the lightsabers. And we're going to have all the Star Wars stuff, but also we're going to give you more kinds of Force users. So I just wonder where you landed on whether there's something you were like even interested in this franchise dealing with, like, where you fall on things like the Force and like wanting to see a different spectrum of people use it, kind of how that landed in a show that is at least playing with those ideas.
Absolutely. First of all, Dathomir, I believe, is the planet Darth Maul is from, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe that's true. Yeah.
And as for witches in the Star Wars universe, hey, I'm game for expanding the idea of what the Force is, what it can do, and who can use it. I think that's all potentially really interesting stuff. Apparently, the witches of Dathomir have like interesting force skills that other Jedi don't, like necromancy and things of that nature. And that'd be cool. You know, there's a lot of like unexplored ideas around the force that I think this show could potentially bring to light. So I'm definitely open to that idea. I'm not closed off to the idea, because I think one of the big dings against the J.J. Abrams, Rian Johnson sandwich of movies is that, I believe something that George Lucas said, I think this is accurate, that like George Lucas was disappointed in the new films because he's like, there's no new world, like there's no new ideas, mm-hmm. new worlds. And yes, Witches of Dathomir is like not necessarily something that is brand new for this show. I think it was also mentioned in Boba Fett and so on, and in the animated series. But like the idea of bringing it to the live action thing, yeah, new worlds, new ideas. I'm totally for that in a Star Wars show. So we'll see how that develops. All right, Patrick Klepek, any other thoughts on the first two episodes of Ahsoka?
No, I mean, I just reiterate what I said at the top, that I'm excited to be excited, because like I said, I was going to drag my bones across this show to the other side, because I'm invested in the multi-threaded storytelling, right? Like I'm watching Mandalorian, and if I'm watching that, I got to watch this because I want to, you know, like I don't mind doing the homework, even if there are lows along the way. But it was going to be a bummer, especially for how I felt about Mandalorian season 3 broadly, which I did not think was very good. It's like, well, if that was a disappointment, because it felt like it was doing so much heavy lifting to start merging these different universes. Like it was Favreau's stuff lining up with the Rebels Clone Wars worlds. And it was just extremely awkward and took away from the strengths of Mandalorian, if that's a show that appeals to you, which it did to me, and just sort of threw most of those out the window in service of like a very Iron Man 2 situation, is like one of the closest analogs I would make for the most recent season. So I was going to be pretty bummed. It's like, all right, well, I kind of got through that show, but at least I got the foundation for like where they're going. And if this one was just as clunky, I was like, ugh, like that was just going to feel bad for someone that wants all these threads to come together in a meaningful way. And so again, I'm excited to be excited to see what happens next week. And like, even like one of the lines that, you know, I was kind of actually sort of surprised that the second episode didn't end on the line of Apprentice, as opposed to cutting to a, you know, a shot of a, you know, a big thing being constructed. Cause that felt really powerful and meaningful for those two characters. Like, I want to see that arc play out. That seems like a really interesting dynamic to have as these characters go on their adventure. So yeah, excited to be excited.
In terms of our upcoming coverage for this show, we're not going to be covering it week by week. I would say it is possible we'll do a finale wrap up. Let us know if you want us to do that at decodingtv@gmail.com. Also, you know, we didn't really talk about this possibility, Patrick, but there's a potential possibility of an every other week situation. But let's talk about that off the air. Let us know how much you enjoyed this conversation at decodingtv@gmail.com. Many of you might be
And we
right.
can also see how the show goes, right?
Yes.
Like
we've had
these first episodes, we'll see what the arc of the show is going forward. And I think as I told David in a private conversation, I was like, I'll let you know. Like I have a good we've had this conversation, and I have a good sense of your baseline. And it's like, hey.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'll just lie to you and be like, no, you got to get to episode
You got to get to.
Great. It gets great, dude.
It gets so good at episode 7. It gets so good at episode 7. You got to check it out. We're broadcasting live right now on youtube.com/decodingTV. ModeMan101 says, don't be surprised if the finale ends with a setup for a second season. Is this how Mandalorian generally has been, Patrick Klepek?
I forget how the first and second season sort of, I felt they were more or less contained, even like Mandalorian season 3, without spoiling the bit, it sort of, you know, kind of ends in a place with certain characters where it could sort of end if it wanted to. Obviously it's not. And like those threads are going to continue. They haven't announced a release date for this film yet, that is supposed to be sort of the culmination of all these arcs. And so I expect Ahsoka to get a second season. I think it's going to be necessary to continue doing all of the building towards what they're trying to accomplish by having the Mandalorian and Ahsoka come together in sort of a like a cinematic sort of conclusion, which is itself is sort of I don't know how that works, right? Like, so then you're marketing this film just to the people that watch the TV shows. Like, so then think of this. Like, we're watching Ahsoka, a show that's trying to bridge animated shows with newcomers to the live action stuff. That's going to culminate in a film that has to assume you have not seen the animated shows or the live. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like a bunch of people like, I like making things hard. Let's make it a little bit harder to get people emotionally invested in our, like, the crawl is going to be very long on that movie. It's like, oh boy, where were you during the Clone Wars? So it's interesting, but I do expect it to get a second season. I would be shocked if this all wrapped up in one go.
The upcoming Dave Filoni movie is what you're referring to, and that's supposed to be set during the New Republic era, right? So that would be this era that we're in right now, right? So
yes.
So the question is, at what point will that take place? And you're assuming after the events of this TV show.
Yeah, my guess is like that film is essentially going to act as a bridge between like a prequel to like A Force Awakens, like, or at least like fills in like maybe it's not like 5 years later these events occur. I don't know exactly how that time all jumps, but I would assume a lot of the work of these shows and that movie is going to be, oh, that's why Kylo, like, oh, now of course it makes sense why all of this exists now in the universe, and a lot of that is going to be connected to Thrawn.
Well, we'll see. I'm also curious how these TV shows and films are tying into each other. The state of Star Wars filmically just seems like very bad right now. That's kind of what it feels like to be, right? Like, as you mentioned earlier in this conversation, they've announced so many movies. Still waiting on that Rian Johnson trilogy. You know, that's... No, I'm just sure that will
Netflix,
never
just pull a Zack Snyder. Just let him cook. Like, it doesn't have to be Star Wars. Just like, just give me a Rian Johnson, like, sci-fi trilogy. Like, I'm sure he could figure it out.
That will never happen.
The experience of being a Star Wars fan and trying to get excited or interested in an upcoming film is like, ooh, fascinating new talent attached. Ooh, fascinating new talent has left the project. Like, Damon Lindelof. Well, acknowledging like that most recent article about what the show, like showrunning of Lost, which was horrendous and awful and made me sick to my stomach on a show that is probably my favorite of all time, like has made the most, like The Leftovers is like one of the most powerful works of art I have ever experienced. I consider it to be one of the best shows ever made. And like, sure, let my boy cook on a Star Wars. And then you got quotes afterwards where he's like, you know, the best part he's like, best part of my life right now is not working on a Star Wars film. And it's like, that's not a good creative environment. Like, that's not where
Well, he apparently got asked to leave it is my understanding.
Yeah. So. And it's just like, I don't envy, like, if you're, it's easy to ask, leave the Skywalker saga behind, leave that all behind. But then what you're left with is, what is Star Wars? And yes, it's a big universe that can technically do anything, but then what is it? And I think that's a really difficult question to answer, and I think explains a lot of the fits and starts, and frankly, like, look backwards, like, pull from the stuff that already happened rather than trying to figure out what happens next. And, you know, I'm curious, like, eventually, like, like, Disney's in a bad shape right now, or at least a weird shape right now. They're going to make a Star Wars movie. Like, Bob Iger, he'll get out there with the camera himself. But, like, Kathleen Kennedy has kind of been spinning her wheels, and I hate how she's been turned into a villain, because that's just not – nothing is as simple as you know, YouTube weirdos will make it seem. But clearly, creatively, they've had trouble figuring out what is Star Wars at that scale in this new era of filmmaking in Hollywood. And now, like, that's, like, colliding with Disney – saying, like, you know what we love franchises. So a Star Wars movie is coming. I don't know what it is. I don't know how soon, and I'm not sure if it'll be any good, but I'm very confident saying in the next 3 years there will be a Star Wars film, come hell or high water.
It is inevitable. Modeman 101 in the chat also says, I'm guessing that the movie will have the failure of Thrawn's attempt to rebuild the Empire and some hints toward the creation of the First Order. That would make sense. The idea that, like, basically there's a mini boss to take out before Snoke, right? Like, in the character of Thrawn, you could generate a lot of sort of, there'd be some decent, that could be a decent movie. You're facing off against, like, a formidable foe. It could be a new, like, Thrawn is a character that most people, not Star Wars fan, but most people don't know about. And I think he could be a compelling villain. So, like, that could be a cool idea. And it's like, hey, here's another mini boss. And yes, he is defeated, but also BT Dub, he loses the battle, but he wins the war.
Yeah, fair.
Okay. Anyway, let us know what you thought of this conversation at decodingtv@gmail.com. And find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. And be sure to follow us at youtube.com/decodingtv. We broadcast live whenever we can. Check out Patrick's other podcast, Remap Radio, as well as his Substack newsletter at crossplay.news. He is Patrick Klepek. I am David Chen. We'll be back next week with a conversation about Telemarketers, the Max docuseries. Until then, thanks so much for listening and watching. Goodbye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.